My goals in my life are to be a good father, to be... Fuck you.
Get loud, right past his home, Ben Carroll!
So the reason I'm single...
Yeah, we know that.
Yeah, because your wife stopped fucking me for free.
You guys ready to see your headline tonight?
Be like the exhibits at a pro-choice rally or something.
Welcome to stage the very funny Vince
Carone. Well, hello there, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Peek Behind the Curtain. My name is Vince Carone, your favorite Chicago ranting comedian. And if I'm not your favorite comedian in Chicago, then what are you doing listening to my podcast? Let's be honest here. That's why I'm here. So this is my 9th podcast now, and I never thought I'd make it past number 1, but I did. And now I'm at number 9, and I'm starting to gain some traction, getting a couple more followers every single week, which is to say I have a couple. So that's great. You can support me best by going to subscribe to all my social media, at Vince Carone on everything. Go to my website, vincecarone.com. Sign up for my mailing list. I let you know when I'm coming out to your area, and that's also the first place that I put any promo codes or discounts to my shows. So if you want any of the behind-the-scenes or inside scoop or first come, first serve, or whatever the fuck the marketing people call this shit, go sign up for my mailing list and you'll be the first one to know what's coming. This week's podcast is coming a little bit early as I am shifting to launching my podcasts on Mondays now instead of Thursdays. Now, you may be sitting there going, but Vince, this is Tuesday when you release this, and that's because I'm late to everything, so my intentions are that these come out on Monday, but because I'm late, and because I just released a podcast a few days ago regarding the time I performed for the Chicago Blackhawks, go check out that episode, let's just dive right into this week. So if I even have anything to talk about from last week, it's going to be what this episode's about anyway, and this week is about the recording of my 5th album, Vincectomy. Last Thursday, December 12th, at Zany's in Rosemont, Illinois, I performed and recorded my 5th album, which will be called Vincectomy. And it was an awesome, awesome night. It was by far my most favorite recording that I've done, both in terms of material, but also in terms of my delivery, the audience response. I've recorded several of these over the years, so this was my favorite one that I've done. And I'll walk you through a little bit of how the night went. But before I talk about how the actual night went, let's talk about how I even got to the point of being able to record Vincectomy. So it's If you're in the outside world from comedy, you know that comedians release a new hour or so of material on Netflix probably every 2 years, 3 years, sometimes 5 years, sometimes 1 year. It really depends on the type of comedian, their style, and how often they can put out new material. For me, the way I perform, I can get a new album put out probably every 2.5 years. That's my goal. Sometimes by the time I have it edited and mixed and produced and distributed, sometimes it's a little closer to 3 years, but I aim for every 2 to 2.5 years. And the reason I aim for this is very simple. I don't fully believe that every single piece of material I'm doing that I record is the best thing that I could possibly come up with. You know, I know that if I worked longer and harder on each of those jokes and all my bits, I could polish this album to make it, you know, even better than it was. But here's the problem with that to me. I get bored quickly. So for me, I've got passion behind my material, behind what I'm talking about, what I'm bitching about, what I'm going crazy about and ranting about on stage. I have a true passion for a lot of what I'm saying up there. But after time of being that passionate over and over and over again, you start to go, who gives a shit about the topic that you once held on to so dearly? And much like a musician who gets tired of playing their hits, a comedian gets tired of saying the same jokes or the same routine all the time. And eventually, this doesn't happen for musicians really, but for comics, what was once funny actually becomes stale. And what was once getting tons of laughs and applause breaks and was your best bit, somehow over the course of time, when you do it too long and you start to lose your passion for it, it ends up becoming like just one of your worst bits and people don't laugh for it anymore. And sometimes you can't figure out why. And I've been able to pin that down for myself as I just lose the passion for it. So for me, recording every 2.5, 3 years or so, what it does for me is it keeps me fresh, it keeps me sharp, it puts me on a time timeline of I have to put this new album out, so I've got to keep working my ass off to get that hour of material ready at that point. And so for me, it's a nice personal challenge to myself, and it documents where I am at that particular point of my life. So for me, I use my comedy albums almost as kind of like my life's diary. This is the story of my life. Like, I can go back and listen to each album and know what was going on in my head, where I was at that point in my life. And my opinions have varied from album to album. You'll find me bitching about a topic one way on one album, and then I'll take the other side on the next one. And that's just a part of the maturation process and, you know, just getting older and writing more from how you feel versus just what's funny, which is what you do when you're younger. So that's why I put these out. And you know, I don't think every comic has to go releasing material that often that fast. I know plenty of comics who really hone their act, and they've got just a really killer act, and that works for them. That's not my style. It doesn't overly work for me. But so I don't really have any advice for comics on which way you should do it. But I will say my only advice to comics is whatever way you do it, challenge yourself with your material. Whether you're brushing up and honing your current stuff or you're writing new, challenge yourself, put yourself out there, take some chances, and keep progressing. You progress as a writer, as a thinker, as a speaker, as all those things in comedy. You progress naturally over the years. So use that progress. Use that forward momentum to help you get better on stage. So for me, this process for vincectomy started in April of 2017. And I can remember that so clearly because April of 2017, mid-April, is when I recorded my last album, I Plead the First. And the second I was done with that, I started right away going, I want to work on my next one. And I had a whole bunch of topics already written down that I'd been itching to talk about. And for me, I remember I posted on social media sometime early or late spring, rather, in 2017 that, you know, I'm starting to work on my next album, and I'm going to Tarantino this one and name it first and figure out the material later. And I said I was going to call it Vincectomy. And I actually wrote a joke about having a vasectomy very early on in that process. So it just kind of stuck. And I felt that was really cool for me. It really, like, it gave me vision towards the end and towards the end goal, and helped me really write and tell an hour long story on stage, basically, with my most recent recording here. So the jokes went through many different iterations over the past couple of years. So in June of 2017, I started writing my vasectomy joke, which is on my new album, and I started talking about it, and that probably went through 8 different iterations before it finally became what it is now. And then I remember in August at the Laughlin Comedy Festival, I debuted a piece of material I was working on called Back in My Day, and it was all about getting older and not, I don't want to be the back in my day dude, like back in my day, I didn't want to be that guy. And I had a huge chunk of material on that. And that was one, it went really well for about a month. And then it fell really, really flat for probably like 9 months. And I ended up just kind of like only trying it, you know, sporadically, very sparingly, just to keep putting it out there because I believed in it. But I just couldn't seem to find the right angle or find the angle I once had. And I remember I was in a car with a very funny comedian named Brooke Sullivan. And I was talking to him about it one day on the way back from a show, and he had seen me do the bit when it was working well. And I was telling him, I'm like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing wrong. And he told me, he's like, when you first started doing it, you were really playing up the back in my day piece. And I was really leaning into that. And I had since kind of strayed from that. And that was the whole attitude of the joke. And so I took his advice and I leaned back into it. And actually that really was what was missing. And that bit kind of came back around. So that was another one that got reworked over time. Then there was just a couple other bits that just organically fell in place. I've got a rant about soccer on this album. And it was one of those, I was just riffing on stage one night, just kind of talking about my life and just, you know, my true feelings on some things that were happening in my life, taking my kids to soccer and sports and swim lessons and a variety of other things. And I was more or less just kind of telling the stories of my weekends, but, you know, just kind of really conveying the inner thoughts. And it just resulted in this rant about soccer that just kind of grew and grew over the course of a month and became what I feel is one of the strongest pieces on this new album here. And it was funny. I'll tell you about a certain story of that when we come back from break and get into the actual night of. But so some of these bits, came about in the past 6 months. You know, they really kind of took their shape. And there's other bits that have just from moment one, they kind of never changed. And they were always the same format and always killed. So my closer is about gay marriage, going to a gay wedding, and, really defending gay rights. And that bit kind of came out the way it's on the album is the way I pretty much first started doing it on stage. And it's just been a monster piece for me the past 2 years. It was my best piece on the album. And it turned a lot of heads. It was one of those think pieces that got a lot of audience members thinking one way at the start of the bit and really challenged their way of thinking to the end. And my goal with writing the gay marriage bit was it was a shift in my writing style for sure. Normally I would write from the offensive approach, like a prosecutor at a trial, like you're looking for the murder weapon, you're looking for a confession, you're looking for all the obvious stuff. That's how my comedy used to be. Look for all the obvious stuff and say that, and then people relate to that and they laugh, and that was okay. This I wrote a little bit more from the defense standpoint. So I heard Doug Stanhope, one of my favorite comedians, one time talk about that's how he approaches his writing, is from the defense lawyer standpoint, and I just thought it was such a cool way of going about it, and I can never really mimic it, because it's just something that has to organically happen. But with this particular bit, that was the way it kind of went for me. And I found myself going I can take every reason I've ever heard for anybody being against gay marriage, and I can combat it both in logic and in a joke form and get these people to laugh at their own arguments. And I can take every single one of these arguments and strip them down to logic on why we shouldn't care about why we shouldn't concern ourselves with what two people who are in love want to do. And by the end of the bit, I'm even talking about how I wish I was gay, and I completely strip all the arguments out of it, to where at the end of the bit, I felt like I really left, 99% of the audience going either just, laughing and on my side, or they had to just go, I don't have any good reasons, I just don't like it. And that was my goal, was to strip all the arguments away and go, when we're down to logic here, there's nothing wrong with it. And if you don't like it, you just have to say it's just because you don't like it. And there's no logical reason anymore. And so that was a big component for me. And I had a lot of fun writing that bit. And it opened up my eyes to write a few other bits in a different fashion. Still in my ranting style, but it allowed me to take a different approach than I have in the past. And some of the newer bits I've been writing are going to be, on my next album that I'll start working on very shortly here. I saved a bunch of material that just didn't fit on this album that I'm really excited to get on the road with now in January and start hitting the road with some of this new stuff. So back in September, I decided I wanted to record my new album this year. I was originally going to do it at the beginning of 2020, but I wanted to record it in 2019. For me, it was just important just to not get to that 3-year mark in between albums. I really wanted to hit that. And so I had just done a fun show at Zany's in Rosemont in September called Generational Gap that I put on about four different generations coming together. And each comic goes up and speaks from their own generation. And it really pulled the audience together. And it was a really cool concept. And I had such a fun turnout there and a fun show that I said that I asked the owner of Zany's and the general manager of Rosemont if I could record my album in December, and they had Thursday, December 12th open. And I knew it was going to be risky, being that close to Christmas. A lot of my material right now is focused on my kids, so I'm targeting a parental audience right now. I knew that would be risky, especially on a Thursday, trying to get people to get babysitters. But I wanted another big goal of mine was to be able to pay for this whole recording with the money from the show that night. So take a door deal and try and draw a crowd there and see, can I bet on myself to make this happen? And so for other comedians, I guess, or even just those that are listening, when you record an album, I don't know you know, if there's a right or wrong way, and I don't know all the best things you could do, but I've learned quite a few things over the past few albums, and here's what really goes into the album. So you got to find, you got to find the place you're gonna record at, and you want to make sure that the place has good sound. You want to make sure the ceilings aren't too high, because the sound will go straight up instead of out, and laughter goes up instead of back at the stage. And so Rosemont Zanies was perfect for that. They have very low ceilings, and the laughter is contained. It was built to be a comedy club, so it's a perfect club. You want to find the right time of year, the right night of the week, and I was kind of handcuffed in that if I wanted to get it done this year, so I had to take Thursday, December 12th, and I just said I'm going to push the living hell out of this thing. You want to find obviously somebody to record it and somebody who knows what they're doing. I've had a few albums that I recorded where people didn't know what they were doing and they turned out like shit, and it's very frustrating. So I've used the same person for the past three albums now, and he just does good. If you're a comic and you want to know who it is, just send me a message and I'll set you up with an introduction. But you want to find somebody that really understands how to mic the comic, and also how to mic the audience, and then how to blend that together through the editing to make sure that you can be well heard and that the recording is seamless at that point. And then you want to make sure that of course you have the right material. But you want to pick your openers, who's going to be on the show with you, and this is an important piece. So you want to make sure the show builds. You don't want the show to peak before you get up there. And if you're going to record an album, you don't want the show to go too long before you get up there. Because normally when you headline at a comedy club, you're doing about 45 minutes. When I record an album, I do about an hour. So that's 15 extra minutes that I'm up there. So that means I'm going to have to shorten the length of this show before I get up there. That way we can still have the show end in a reasonable fashion. Otherwise, the crowd's going to get tired. And so you want to find a couple comics who understand that this is a night that's about you and it's about your recording, and you have to be selfish on a night like this. And you want to find comics that are going to do a good job in their role, but lead and build it to you. You don't want a comic that's going to bury you. And I don't mean like a comic you can't follow. It's okay to bring on a comic who is better than you, as long as the comics know their role in the lineup that night is to progress the show to you and not to overshadow you. Okay. And so what I did is I wanted to find two comics that I knew were super professional, that were going to be super funny. I really wanted the crowd to be laughing a lot before I got up there. So I wanted to just find comics who had different styles than me, and we wouldn't interfere on premises of material. I didn't want to be talking about my kids and have another comic up there talking about their kids. That would just be too much kid talk for one recording. So I got Paul Farvar to host the show, and Paul's just a super funny comedian. He produces a lot of shows throughout Chicago, and he's got a podcast called Singles Only, and he's got a lot of irons in the fire. But Paul hosts quite a bit at Zany's Rosemont. He's very familiar with the room. He's very good at bringing the crowd together up front, and Paul can close a show too. So I'm not pigeonholing him as an MC, but he's a strong MC and he knows the role. He knew how to get the crowd moving. He knew to, you know, make the night about me and ask me what I needed out of the night and how I wanted it structured. He knew to remind people to keep it down, to be quiet, to let them know that we're recording, and just these things seem obvious, but if you don't properly set up these logistics, they can get overlooked and you can get fucked on your recording. And then the feature, I brought in Rena Kalm, who's just absolutely one of my favorites. She's so fucking funny, and she moved down to Texas, but she rarely lives there because she's on the road, just probably 29 days a month, just on the road, just performing comedy all over this country. She's got something like 45 or 48 states under her belt or something crazy right now that she's performed in. It's just super awesome. And she's just got a very, very funny style, a great delivery, and just super smart, funny joke writer. And I knew she would do the job really well as well. But I also knew that Paul and Rena, we didn't have any crossover material between the three of us, so we'd all be unique enough, and the show would build, towards what I wanted to do to end the show that night, and that was great. And so, so once they were in place, I got them locked down and let them know, hey, here's how I want the show to progress. Here's how much time I want you to do. I had Paul do between 12 and 15. I had Rena do between 15 and 20. And my only real advice to them was do whatever material you want. Get the crowd laughing. You know, when you hit your time zone, if whenever you feel like you got them, leave the stage and pass the mic on to the next person. And, you know, that was really the only structure I gave them. And then I told Paul when he introduced me just to say, from Chicago, your headliner, Vince Carone. I didn't want like a huge intro. I didn't want like my name drawn out like Vince Carone. I didn't want that because I'm recording it. I don't want to have all that in between the audience clapping when I come up. I want a nice crisp clapping sound to start out my album. I had to tell the sound engineer at Zany's not to play any music when I was coming up either because I didn't want music to be played on my recording, and then I'm at risk of liability for having a licensed song on there. And so I didn't want to deal with that mess and get an unlicensed song. So I just said, just no music. Let's just cut that off either. And then I had to talk to the GM at Zany's and let him know, hey, I'm going to be doing an hour. Please let the wait staff know. They got an extra security in there that night just to make sure that that nobody was heckling. And we just kind of talked about what we would do if that were to happen. And I know enough now that when I'm recording, if something goes wrong, just to pause and actually backtrack when the situation's cleared up, backtrack in the material and kind of just do it over because we can clean it up in post. That didn't happen this time. We didn't have to do that. But I've learned that from the past few times I've recorded. So when I was recording No Complaints back in March of 2014, it was a Saturday night, the first show Saturday, 300 people in the room. And I'm just killing. I'm having such a great set. And I'm in my closer, and my closer is murdering. And it was my favorite bit on that album. And I hadn't had, out of the first two shows, I didn't get a good recording of the closer. And I'm in the moment going, this is killing. And I'm literally like 2 minutes left on my recording, and the manager at the club comes up with a beer bottle that has a note on it that says stretch, meaning go longer because we didn't settle up all the bills in here yet, so we need you to stay up here longer. And when he said that to me, and he handed me the beer in the middle of me ranting like a lunatic, it fucked me up. It pulled me out of the moment, and it ruined the whole ending of that show. So I couldn't use that closing piece for that album. I had to use a different recording from a different night for the closer. So my closer, while it's funny, it's a little bit weaker in terms of response on No Complaints, and that really kind of bummed me out and pissed me off. In that moment, the right move would be go get the MC, tell the MC to go up when I'm done and do a little more time because I'm recording. You don't fuck with me while I'm recording. But we're going to take a quick break. And on the other side of the break, we'll spend a few minutes here just talking you through how the night actually went once I got on stage. All right, so it's the night of. It is Thursday, December 12th, and I'd been panicking for 2 months trying to get people to buy tickets and get people to come out. And when the week started, I had about 110 tickets sold, and the room holds about 220 or so, I think. And so I was like, you know, while that's a lot and while that's fun and cool, there was also a part of me that was massively disappointed. Like I thought I'd have more, but I also knew that it's a Thursday and I'm going to have a lot of last minute people who had to get babysitters at the last minute. So when all the smoke cleared, I believe I was around 210 when Thursday night went off. And so the room outside of a couple of seats here and there looked pretty sold out, which was cool. And so that was awesome. And I got there about 6 o'clock for an 8 o'clock show, and it took about maybe a half hour to set up with my sound guy and just run a couple tests. And you know, in this moment, you have your handheld mic that you're going to talk through. They also put a lavalier mic connected to my shirt. That way, if something happens to the handheld mic, we're still capturing my voice into the lav at that point. And then we set up a couple mics in the crowd, and Zany's also has a couple mics in the ceiling already miking the crowd, which made it awesome because now we're going to be able to have the audience mic'd 4 or 5 different ways, which is really, really cool. So Paul went up and did awesome, and Rena went up and just had a great time. I want to get them, I didn't get a chance to, but I want to just pull them in for a couple questions in an interview and put them on this podcast. So I'll try and do that within the next few weeks just to pull their thoughts on that night. But then I got up there about 35 minutes into the night. I got up there and Paul brought me up there. And, you know, a lot of people say, Vince, were you nervous? You know, I get anxious before shows more than nervous. I'm not scared of being up there. I just want to be up there. And I want it done. I hate waiting before the show. So I just wanted to be up there where I feel more comfortable than I do just sitting in the wings. But I did get to watch Paul and Rena. I didn't hide out in the green room. I actually watched the show. So I got to feel the vibe of the room. And I just had so many people on my side that night. It was so cool. Such awesome support. Really appreciate people taking a night out from their family and getting a babysitter to be there for my special night. It meant the world to me. But I got up there and I opened my show, and I had three quick like little one liners. you know, that I opened with, and they all got the right amount of laughs that I was looking for. And then I went into my material, and I was really excited. I was really happy. Like, I was able to be in the moment, and Rena gave me this compliment after the show, and it meant a lot to me because I'd worked so hard on this set, and I really, my big goal of this recording was to live up the night and enjoy the night and be in the moment. Because with my other albums, I would take them too seriously, and I wasn't sure, like, if, I wasn't sure like how I was doing, and then you're trying too hard, and I just wanted to actually just live it up. And I'd ask the audience a question, and I got a different answer than what I expected, and I riffed on that, played on that. My mom started laughing really, really hard at one point in the night, to where her laugh was louder and longer than everybody else. And so I called her out on it and had some fun with her. And it was just a really special moment for me and my mom. And there was just a couple really cool organic moments like that. And that's, I really wanted that. I didn't want my recording to come out so much like staged. And, you know, I told even the sound, my sound guy before the show, I said, when you edit this, like, I don't want editing extra laughter in places. Like, I want the ebbs and flows of the show. And I said this on my last album too. I want it to sound like the night sounded. Okay. A show is supposed to have peaks and valleys and arcs, and you need the downs, so the highs and the uppers feel even better and sound better and laugh harder. You need a Vince McMahon from WWE as a marketing quote, when he's asked about, you know, why are there at WrestleMania, your biggest event of the year, why are there always a couple matches that are duds? Like, why wouldn't you put like the most amazing people in all the matches since it's your WrestleMania? And he said, you have to sit people down to make them stand back up. And what he means is, like, people can only be at a level 10 for so long before they have to calm down. The same thing with comedy. You can only laugh, you know, gut laugh for so long before you have to come back down. And eventually you'll dilute your own funny, or you'll dilute your own wrestling matches if you don't bring people back down, like, intentionally. And so what he was saying is, like, if he has nothing but the best superstars at WrestleMania, eventually people's excitement's going to dwindle just because they can't be at a 10. And so you're going to have two awesome guys in the ring, and their excitement level is going to be like at a 6 just because they have to take a rest. And so now you've turned two guys who were capable of a level 10 into a level 6, and you've diluted your own product at that point. You're better off putting in people who would generate a level 6, so it seems more natural and fitting at that point. And it's the same thing with comedy. You're not trying to write jokes that get you a level 6 response, but you also know that not everything is going to be a 10. You're going to have a 6, a 7, and a 5 that carry you through to get to that big 10 again. And that's the way I started thinking of it as well when I heard that piece of advice. And so it was a lot of fun. I barely slipped up on any wording, and I got all the material out I wanted, which is for me a little different because I rant so much that I'll change how I get to the jokes each night. I don't always get there the same way. The punchlines are the same, but the way I get there sometimes shifts. And I was firing on all four cylinders, and the reaction I got at the end was a huge applause. But just listening to people after the show, my own family and friends with specific compliments, you know, my family hadn't seen me in probably a year, so they didn't see hardly any of this material. It was really, really cool. A couple of my comedian buddies came up to me and they're like, dude, Vince, we were on the road with you while you were writing this. How is it possible we didn't even know the first 15 minutes of your act? When did that come together? And that was really cool to hear because I worked my ass off for this to happen. So I remember being conscious and in the moment going, I'm really enjoying this. I'm having fun. This is the album I want. This is the album I was looking for. And I was really happy when it was all done. And then a couple cool things happened for me at the end. A couple super fans, Donna and Robbie and a few others who come out to see a ton of Chicago comedians. They love comedy, you know, and you know, some of them will bring their husbands and their family and their kids, and they're super supportive. And Donna had brought another comedian a cake for their birthday about a month ago, and she posted it on Facebook. And my birthday was in September, and Donna was at my show that weekend and didn't get me a cake. And so I gave her some shit on Facebook as a joke. And so after Thursday night's show, I'm sitting there talking to some people in the crowd, and the Zany staff and Donna comes up, and they got a big fucking cake with my face on it saying Vincectomy, just like printed, screen printed right onto the cake. And it was just absolutely hilarious, and so sweet. And we all had cake, and there's a nice picture of my wife with the huge knife, who I just got done making jokes about on stage, you know, cutting off my head in the cake. And you can check that out on my Instagram if you want to see a couple of those pictures of what the night was. But it was just an awesome, fun night. And then when I went back into the green room, the GM at Zany's had popped a bottle of champagne and had a celebratory champagne toast with me and the other comics. And, you know, it couldn't have been better. And I ended up being able to pay off my whole album recording with it. So the night was a monster, monster success. And I'm really, really happy that that I set out and did what I wanted to do. I got the album I'm looking for. And I'm really excited to put this out. It'll be edited the first week of January, and I should have it digitally out before the end of January. That's my goal. And I'm not letting the grass grow under my feet because I'm already starting work on the next album already. So that's what's coming up for me. I'm calling my my tour schedule for 2020 the Burden of Proof Tour. And when you come out and you see a show and you see some of the material, you'll understand why I'm calling it that. But yeah, I like that name. I like Burden of Proof. The burden of proof is on the defendant, and that's the mindset I have right now in my writing. And so I think right now that's a tentative name for the next album. And then there's a couple, you know, Vince puns that that people have suggested. You know, I do like Vince Carone, a convincer, because a convincer is Vince Carone scrambled up. But there's a couple of cheesy names like that I'm thinking of. But I got a little while before that comes. But I'm not letting grass grow under my feet. I'm going to be working hard on that material and making sure when I come back throughout this upcoming year to places I've been before that I'm bringing new stuff. So you know, return audience members can see something new that's super important to me, that you don't get to see the same act every time I come through, that I'm bringing something new for you. So that was this week. I appreciate you guys listening to that. Here's what's coming up for me. Tomorrow night, Wednesday, I'm at Hotel Indigo in Naperville, Illinois. I'm doing a quick set at the end of the night. I believe a couple of other comic buddies of mine will be there. And this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, I'm actually going to be at the Comedy Bar in River North, Chicago. And this is a fun room for me. I don't perform there often. I would love to perform there more. I'm trying to get in on their good side, but they do have me out once every other year or so. And so I'll be there this weekend having some fun. I'll be the feature spot, so probably doing 20, 25 minutes a show, having some fun with that. So I do appreciate you listening. Make sure you subscribe to my YouTube channel, like my Facebook page, follow me on Instagram and Twitter, all of those at Vince Carone. You can find videos on my website. Any questions for me, send them to vince@vincecarone.com, and look for rants on my website. As I was recording this, I heard a big loud noise behind me, and that was my son walking into the room, and it scared the shit out of me. So if you heard me kind of jump or my voice quiver, that's what just happened here. So I'm going to go wipe my ass, and I will talk to you next week's podcast, which will come out on Monday. Thanks for listening.